Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Now, back to our main presenter today for today is Barry Boyce. Just let me give you a short introduction in case some of you don't know who Barry is. So he's a longtime meditation practitioner, professional writer, editor, and teacher, specializing in applications of mindfulness to everyday life. You might know him as the founding editor of the Mindful magazine and the mindful.org portal, and he co-authored multiple publications. So Barry, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and passion with us today. The stage is all yours now.
Thank you, Augie. And hello to everyone out there. So I think based on what Philip was just saying, I think I could say that this presentation and time together is about speaking and writing with the whole body. You could also say speaking and writing from the heart. So a little bit about myself and why I chose this topic. As Augie said, I've been practicing mindfulness meditation for quite a while. I started in 1972. About a decade later, I started teaching mindfulness meditation. I also trained in university in writing, communications, and journalism, and I was a working journalist for many years in Washington, D.C., in the political arena. But then in the 90s, I began to switch to doing journalism and writing primarily in the area of mindfulness, meditation, and related contemplative practices. In terms of meditation teaching, I used to teach exclusively in person, one-on-one, in small groups, And then when I started Mindful Magazine and the website, along with a number of other founders, in 2012, I also began doing book editing in the mindfulness arena. And that really made me appreciate the power and importance of speech, because I was communicating myself at a distance, as we're doing today. We're not in a room together. And the way that speech lands with people is extremely important, particularly in an area like mindfulness, meditation, embodiment, these kinds of topics, because we're not talking to people about their athletic shoes or their clothing. We're talking about how we're working with our mind and our mind and body. And these are vitally important topics. And so, you know, I feel a great responsibility in communicating about them. So that's why I've been teaching lately about mindful speech. And not mindful speech from the sense of we have to carefully watch every word we say, but more an appreciation of how speech and by extension writing works all together. I do a lot of coaching of people who are writing about mindfulness and meditation, and just a little bit of the last part of this presentation, I hope we'll be able to touch on how I work with people in that arena. And I have a PowerPoint, which I will be displaying on the share screen at various points. And if you're interested in getting it afterwards, the Embodiment Conference will make it available. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is the fact that speech is magical. To appreciate the magic of speech. By magic, I'm not talking about something that's inexplicable by science, but it's really about the awesomeness and wonder of something so ordinary and mundane. When speech occurs, if you pay attention to what's going on, physiologically, so to speak, air is passing through our tongue and teeth, our mouth cavity, our lips and our nostrils, and the air is cut up and shaped in particular ways, and somehow as a result of that, images appear in other people's minds. And that's rather astounding to appreciate how that happens. So in the context of embodiment, we're appreciating something that's actually going on in our body that connects us to other people in a very powerful way. And of species, our communication is likely the most robust and powerful, which also, in addition to creating great opportunities, as we know, creates great danger. Hate speech, propaganda, all of those kinds of things. And even in our own lives, if we lash out angrily at somebody, we know the kinds of effects that can have. Also, we know the effects of how we speak to ourselves, perhaps angrily and harshly. So that's the first point to appreciate, that there's a great magic and power in speech. And secondly, that it yields results, as I was talking about. When we speak, and when speech takes the form of writing on social media, for example, which in the United States, I'm speaking to you from a beautiful day in Nova Scotia, Canada, on the shores of the Atlantic, down in the United States, where I don't know, many of you may be there now. There's an incredible amount of powerful social media going on right now, affecting people in a variety of ways. So if we go way back to when humans were gathered on the plain or in caves, we communicated in small groups, one-on-one, just a couple of people. So you could gauge easily how something was landing with that small group of people. You could get immediate feedback You know, that's the co-part of communication. You know, we think so much of sending out communication, but communication is something that's happening together. So if you said something harsh, the effect might be on three or four people, or through rumor, maybe 20 or 50. Now, somebody puts something out on social media or broadcasts it, the effects can ripple to hundreds of thousands and even millions of people. So this power is extremely important for us to appreciate, and something we can bring our body to completely, bring our mindfulness to completely. One of the main things that can be helpful is to insert pauses in our speech activity so we can take into account, as I've been saying, how our speech might be landing. So the more we can insert pauses, which is a general mindfulness principle, pausing and noticing, then we can be more in touch with how our speech is reaching people. We can't control how it will land. You can't, you know, you say something very nice to somebody, but they take it the wrong way, for example. And when you send something out into the world, it can be misunderstood. I find this all the time in terms of folks misunderstanding what mindfulness means. So while you can't control how something lands, you can be more aware of who's receiving it and how it might land. So the magic of speech, magic and power of speech, speech yields results. And the third thing I want to emphasize is appreciating silence. When we speak, we're breaking silence. So silence is the background. Now silence, you think of it in a larger sense, there's all sorts of sound going on. When I stop speaking, right now I'm hearing the wind. My neighbor next door is building some kind of little building over there. There's bird sounds. So when we're speaking of silence, we're talking about the break from speech. And speech, conversely, is a break in the silence. Silence has a golden quality to it. Silence is golden. It's spacious. And it also can be a little fearful. In meditation retreats throughout history, it's been a key aspect to have silent time. As you're practicing mindfulness meditation, or yoga or other kinds of contemplative activities, you often quiet during that time. And during the so-called break periods and retreats, we often have silent time. Sometimes we silently eat together. And it can be awkward. You know, we want to fill up that space. So a part of mindfulness, a part of embodiment, is beginning to become, well, not simply beginning, but in an ongoing way, becoming more comfortable with quiet. So that if we can become more comfortable with that awkward quiet, then when we speak, we're not just trying to fill up the space. I have to fill up the space. I have to talk. I have to say something. I've got to fill this up because, you know, if I don't fill it up, then what's happening? I've got to fill this up somehow. You know, let me talk. Let me say something. Please, let me say something. And, you know, when that turns into social media, then you have a tweet storm and blah, 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 blah. So much blah, blah, blah. It's painful. It's painful to be bombarded with that. So if we begin with appreciation of silence, then we're less likely just to fill up the space with words, and which decreases their power. And we also might become more choosy about what we listen to. There's a certain person right now who speaks a lot, who I am on a very strict diet of how much I listen to that person, because it's not news to me what that person says. It doesn't give me anything that I require to get to the next moment. So we can be choosy about what we listen to. So in terms of appreciating the silence, I'd like to start with just to take a little mindfulness break here and have a few minutes of silent mindfulness meditation, which I will start out guiding. And then for just a few minutes, we'll be quiet. So wherever you're seated, if it's in a chair or on a cushion, please, if it's possible, if your body allows it, sit up straight, but not stiff. So your upper body is erect, and feel the weight of your whole body on the chair or the cushion. Your feet or your legs are touching the floor, the cushion, the ground, the carpet. And somewhere down there is the earth that you are ultimately sitting on, and you can feel the pull of its gravity. So let it pull your shoulders down. You know, if your shoulders are hunched up, let them drop. Let your jaw, let the gravity pull, let your jaw drop. You could have your mouth just slightly open. If you put your tongue behind your top teeth, it will allow your mouth to just be slightly open, very slightly. And you may drop your head in a gesture of humbleness, your chin slightly down. And in this practice, you're first going to rest our attention on our body. And as I've been talking about, the weight of it, feeling it touching the chair or the cushion, feel our feet touching the floor, feel the solidity and of the earth beneath us. And then also pay attention to and notice the quality of the air around us and the ambient sound, the light. And now let's take three conscious breaths, noticing the whole breath as it comes in and out. Now, for just a few minutes, rest your attention on the breath as it comes out. And your eyes may be open or closed as you choose. So the breath goes out, dissolves into space. We allow a gap. And then the next out breath comes out. If you find your attention has wandered, as it will, from noticing the breath and resting your attention on it, just say to yourself, thinking, label it thinking, and bounce back to the out breath, the next out breath. So we'll just do that for about a minute. I won't be talking. Okay, thank you. So now I'm going to share my screen, if I can pull that off. So now I'd like to talk about four aspects of speech to notice. The first is space. So what surrounds the words? So noticing that there always is space around the words. So if we can notice the space, we're less inclined to try to fill it up. And each of these relates to the others in interesting ways. So space and speed, for example, are related to each other, as we'll talk about in a second. So there's that first aspect is space. And in a moment, I'm going to be putting a phrase up on the screen and illustrating each of these principles. But for now, let's just go through them. Volume. Much is communicated in by how loud or how soft we say something. So volume is critical. And volume, by the way, all of these features come across in our writing as well. Because writing is a human invention to copy speech, and it carries over all of these features. Next is speed, which is not only about being slow, talking very slowly, but it's about noticing pace and how pace affects how speech lands. for example, if you're talking really fast, it can sometimes be difficult for people to figure out how they can have room to participate in dialogue. So we're emphasizing strongly here the co-part of communication, that not just the one-way street, it's coming from us and it's going out there, but there's something going on between us. So that brings us to listening. So it's important to listen, to appreciate listening to yourself and to others. And we can notice these in our whole body. It's not just a mental thing. Much of communication is about the whole body. So this is a famous mindfulness statement: thoughts are not facts. So I'm going to say it a few times and talk about it. Thoughts are not facts. Thoughts. You feel the space around that? Thoughts! If I just blurt it out, there's less space. Thoughts. If you pay close attention, and you know, some of the early yoga teachers were also teachers of speech and grammar. And it's not an accident, because they are both aspects of breath. So you can even notice the space between the sounds, not just between the words. Thoughts. Thoughts. So in terms of volume, thoughts are not facts. Thoughts are not facts. Thoughts are not facts. Thoughts are not facts. So volume is a critical element in how speech lands with people. And as the volume increases, the way it lands in the body is as danger. It's anxiety producing. So, because we yell to startle, or we yell to be heard across a great distance. And all of these, as I say, carry over into our writing as well. There can be high volume in writing. So then speed or pace, thoughts are not facts. 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 So with pace, there's also where we might put the emphasis. And this is not about linguistics, although linguistics is a fascinating topic area and something I've studied. This is about mindfulness of how words work. And the last part, listening, is simply to, in relation to those other three, to have an aspect of your speaking. We talk about in mindfulness something called meta-awareness. So you have your awareness, but then you're aware that you're aware. You're aware of what's going on. So you have your thought, but you're aware of that thought and how it's being, how it's coming out, so to speak. So the next thing we're going to do is to take this a step further and do what's called a contemplative reading or contemplative recitation. So in this case, we're going to look at that same line again, and I'm going to ask you to do this yourself. I'll do it once and then you can do it. So we begin with three conscious breaths. Then we read the line aloud. You contemplate each word, and then you contemplate the whole line, and then you say it out loud again. So it's a kind of a way of studying, so to speak. So let's begin with three conscious breaths. Now I read the line aloud. Thoughts are not facts. I take a moment to contemplate or appreciate each word. See how it lands in my body. And then flash on the whole. And then say it out loud again. Thoughts are not facts. So if you don't mind, just try doing that yourself for a moment. We'll do it again. Take three conscious breaths. Now say the line out loud to yourself, looking at the screen. Now take a moment to appreciate each word. Then the whole, flash on the whole. Thoughts are not facts. And then say it out loud again. So this is a way that I've been trained to study mindfulness teachings so that you can use maxims like this. By studying them in this contemplative way, through contemplative reading and recitation, they become more memorable. And there's something you can keep coming back to. And this is not just in the mindfulness tradition. The contemplatives of every tradition have had some method of making this kind of relationship with words so that I think you can appreciate, hopefully, the difference between this kind of intimate engagement with a few words and all the blather of constant tweet storms. You know, what happens to the power of speech in that? But if you could, you know, have a few words of poetry or even a whole poem that you can appreciate in this way, it can live with you. So I want to do this with one more line, which is, oops, am I sharing the screen anymore? I forgot. Let's see.
You're not sharing currently. Yeah,
okay, I think I now am. So rest attention on the out breath. So this is a common mindfulness instruction. And the words here are vital because if we listen to the word rest and rest attention, it gives us a different flavor than focus on, watch, pay attention to, that there can be an idea that I need to drag my mind from wherever it was to this breath. Rather than that, in the very act of attention, there's already that the attention is already there and we allow it to rest or land. Imagine a butterfly landing on a leaf, resting. Imagine a butterfly resting on a leaf. You know, just that little bit of touching that's going on there. So this is about really listening to and appreciating the instruction. So let's do the contemplative recitation. So we start with three conscious breaths. Sit up straight, feel your weight, the ground. Start with three conscious breaths, fully conscious breaths. Now, please read these words aloud. Now, we're doing this sort of quickly because we only have so much time today, but you could do this in a much longer way, more drawn out. So now appreciate each word, particularly the major words, rest, attention, out-breath. Now, flash on the meaning as a whole. What it says to you. How it speaks to you. Now, say it out loud again. Rest attention on the out-breath. So in this way, these kinds of instructions, we can inquire of them more. Well, what does this mean in a deeper way? And then that inquiry, if you're with fellow meditation practitioners or with a teacher, that can become the source of dialogue. So why don't we see if there's any Q&A out there? Agi, is there anybody who has a question?
Yeah, there are also a couple of comments. So people find it very calming, eye-opening exercises, contemplative recitation. So thank you for that. There's also some comments on, you know, how powerful speech really is. And an example from Canada that the Prime Minister posed in a speech and how big of an impact it had on the listener. So these are really impactful. Anyone in the main room who would like to come off mute and share their experience or ask a question? It's just an invitation, no pressure. And then if not, in the meantime, we do have some questions coming in, primarily around how we could, you know, having so much talk going on these days, and then we come across like so many different inputs and messages. So how can we make sure that something that would be significant for us as a meaning won't get lost? So I think it's about filtering, actually, and if you have any hints and tips for that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question about filtering and making choices about what we listen to and how we listen. So, you know, I worked as a political reporter, and I believe in staying on top of things, so to speak, being a good citizen, as it were. So I'm not talking about a kind of know-nothing approach. But there's a book, I think it's called Humankind. If I can just take a second here, I think I can find it on my iPad here so that I make a proper reference. In any case, once I find the reference, what the author talks about there is that he makes a difference between, makes a distinction between news and genuine reporting. So news is kind of yelled at us, you know, with big headlines and, you know, breaking in. And what this activates for us is our flight, freeze, or fight kind of response. That's what we're attuned to. So I counsel to be attentive to what's real news to you. Is it truly new information that's needed? And choose more often to engage something that you can engage in a reflective way. And to the extent that you listen to news, try to insert pauses that cut the triggering. And I find if I get triggered, I have to turn it off. If I get too triggered and I can't cut the response, I need to turn it off. And I like to try to find ways to be in dialogue with people. If I can't have, if it's just coming in and I can't have a dialogue, then it's very unsatisfying. So I like that. I like to find people that I can talk with this. I mean, usually you're going to find like-minded people, but that's not entirely a bad thing. If you're fortunate, maybe you can find a way to engage with people whose perspectives are different, and remembering not to be triggered by that. Is there another question or follow-up or?
Yeah, I think, I mean, depending, we have around 10 minutes left. I don't know if you would like to share anything else from your slides. There is one question that might, well, there are actually two questions that might follow this this point quite well. So one is about Gloria asking if we could talk a little bit more about pauses in writing. So if you wanted to cover that in a moment, that would be great. But before that, Marielle is asking for some advice on that, you know, she's finding that she's often formulating slowly and deliberately and find it annoying that people will often interrupt her or finish their sentences, you know, in a way that she wouldn't have wanted to. So if you have any advice, maybe just like a hint and tip.
Wow.
Yeah, that is challenging. There's a kind of cultural norms that you're working with there, where you're kind of swimming upstream against a speedier relationship with speech that is, you know, quite widespread. And so the best you can do, I think, is to have patience and try to see if you can gently insert, excuse me, please just let me finish for a moment here. Also taking that as some indication that with the people you're speaking to, maybe there's some impatience there that you need to respect a bit, because so you may have to be more brief in finishing up, but at least ask for that kind of permission. And if you need to ask a couple of times, maybe in a way you'd be slightly training people to listen better. And sometimes I just have to walk away from such conversations if I find that, look, it's just too, people aren't willing to hang out and hear and share. So I hope that's a bit helpful. You know, I want to first confirm it's a very difficult and challenging situation. And, you know, you can keep bringing more and more awareness to that. I try to find choose situations where I can have good conversations, and you find that rich, and, you know, where you have a good listener and somebody that you can listen to. It's an enjoyable part of life. I have a friend that I walk with about every other day. We walk in the woods and we have lovely little conversations interrupted by lots of silence and experiencing nature. And it's a lovely way to do it. And sometimes we sit on a bench and, you know, pay attention to the whole context. So I only have a few minutes left, and I did promise something about writing, and somebody asked a question about it. So I'm going to finish with that. And I'm still screen sharing, right? So we're seeing mindful writing here. All right, so as I said earlier, writing is not a natural human ability. This is important to take into account. It's not a natural human ability that will emerge from the appropriate developmental environment. Speech is. If you have those faculties of hearing and speech production, and you are surrounded by other human beings, you will learn to speak. You will not learn how to write. Writing is a human invention to copy speech, and therefore it must be taught. There are many types of writing, many, many, many types of writing, but for our purposes, I want to delineate two. Reflective free writing, like journaling, for example, and intentional writing, where the purpose is to communicate. For the time being, and for this purpose, I'm going to leave out pure narrative or fiction storytelling. Storytelling is an important part of any kind of communication, but here I'm talking about writing mainly where you're trying to communicate or inform or persuade. So briefly, and as I say, we'll be sharing this, there are four writing features and processes that I was taught about when I was trained in communication. And this is how I coach people I do book editing for. I work with them from the beginning of their idea to the completion of the book. And the first feature is force. And that comes from invention and inquiry. So force has to do with is a person you're communicating with, are they moved? Are they moved in some way? Are they moved from point A to point B? There's some place you would like to take people. And that developing force in your writing comes from invention, which is an ancient word talking about just contemplating what you'd like to talk about, and inquiry. What are people interested in listening to? What can they hear? So sometimes that's talked about as, say, audience analysis. It's just thinking about, who am I trying to talk to here? Quick example. All right, I want to talk to teenagers. I want to talk to young people. So I need to spend a lot of time listening to them and being clear about what they're interested in. And what I want to talk with them about is mindfulness. So then how are they going to hear it? So before I've ever written a single word, I spend most of the time on this part. Because you can write something beautiful about mindfulness for teenagers and they'll never get it because you haven't done this kind of work. So the next part is integrity, meaning structural integrity, that how it hangs together. What's the beginning? What's the middle? What's the end? Or are you doing it more loosely? Are you largely doing it by telling a story? Or are you breaking into parts, like I did at the beginning of this presentation, having three principles? So structural integrity comes from shaping, taking the time to shape how the overall message will be delivered. If it's a book, how many chapters? How will those chapters be broken down? How will they work? And then the next feature is fluidity, that the speech is most lovely when it flows. And when we're talking, we speak freely. We don't carve out every word, what I'm going to say next. It comes out in a very fluid way. And the ancient grammarians who I was talking about, who were also yoga teachers, had this appreciation of fluidity in terms of breath, the flow of the breath. So in this case, fluidity comes from doing the first draft in fire, as I was taught. So let it out there. Once you know what you would like to communicate, who you're communicating to, then you let it go. Write like crazy, no judgment. And finally, exactness comes from reviewing what you've written. And so if you draft in fire, you review in ice. Slowly, carefully, weighing, appreciating, trimming, sharing it with other people who will help you improve it. And so I'd like to end our session by speaking these aspirations out loud. So I think I can do that in less than a minute. May we speak with gentleness and, when necessary, with force and clarity combined. May we appreciate how others are hearing what we say. May we listen fully to both ourselves and others, to their whole being, not just their words. May hateful speech dissipate and be recognized for the harmful weapon it is. May beautiful, stirring words inspire compassion and peace. May we enjoy the deep power of silence. So thank you for your time today. And hopefully we'll communicate in the future in some way. Thanks, Agi, and thanks to the Embodiment Conference.
Thank you so much, Barry. I mean, I'm just so touched by this. I wasn't expecting these six aspirations at the end. I'm really touched, and thank you so much for the whole session. There's so much love coming in the chat. I hope you see that too, how people have enjoyed listening to you, how they feel you walk the talk as well. So in your presentation, not just told us, you know, what to do and how to approach speech, but really demonstrated. Thank you for this wonderful session. And then before we close off, and I will come back to you for a last question in a moment, Barry. So for those of you who would like to continue the conversation, don't forget that you can join our Facebook group. So you are able to interact with fellow presenters or fellow participants, but also you can join the coffee breaks via the portal. So those are like small groups of folks being interested in embodiment, randomly being paired up and talking to each other. So I recommend you check that out. And as you know, there's so much more of embodiment wisdom being shared throughout the conference. So if you can, I recommend you also purchase the full library. If you'd like to have more time to digest the content, get access to perks like learning lists and audio-only access, support us and say thank you as well and help making all this conference free for in the duration of the conference itself. It's 50% off now, so do check that out. And then back to you, Barry. So the last question, as I promised, what is your top tip to stay embodied?
Yes. I just want to say that somebody did say that the book I was talking about is Humankind, A Hopeful History, and that is correct. So just to get that reference in. So my top tip for embodiment is to pause. When you pause, the silence rushes in. Let it be there. It's a gift. So thank you for your time.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Barry. And thanks for all for being here. Have a lovely day ahead. We will now end this session.
Bye, everyone.